From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
And good evening, everyone. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Spirit Monkeys Radio. Whether you're listening on satellite, on the internet, on the podcast, wherever you find yourself, it's always nice to have you. Pat Brown's here. She's a criminal profiler, an investigative criminal profiler. You see her on Nancy Grace and other shows. And I thought I'd bring her on tonight to talk about the sad case of the missing police sergeant's wife, Stacy Peterson. Hi, Pat.
Hey, Dana.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You know, it seems like every time that we turn on the television, there's another missing woman. Sadly, we're starting to see more police officers' wives, girlfriends being taken from us. Granted, they're high-profile cases, and the public likes high-profile cases. Let's talk about this Peterson case, and in the next 10 minutes or so, what sort of a person is this Drew Peterson, assuming he's responsible for the disappearance of his wife?
Right. Well, that is the question, whether he is responsible or not. But we do know some things about him. We know that he is a serial marrier.
Right.
He's already had four wives.
I've never heard that before, but that's,
serial marrier.
That's a good term.
He's had four wives. He's divorced three of them. One ended up dead in the bathtub.
Yeah.
Under unusual circumstances.
Right.
And so you have to say to yourself, you know, what's up with this guy? You know, that he's having so much problems with these women. And why is this man committing adultery on his third wife with a 17-year-old girl, and he's 30 years her senior?
Is this a sign of the times? Yes, serial marrier, again, I've never heard that term before, but it's correct. But if you look at the field of law enforcement, and you hate to put a label on law enforcement officers, but many of them have been remarried and divorced and remarried and divorced. And I'm going to talk to Denise Brown a little bit later on this evening and talk about domestic violence. There's a huge domestic violence aspect to this case, too.
Right. You know, I think with police officers, of course, this is just some... One, you know, we don't pay attention if we say it's a bus driver or you know,
right.
a truck driver, but we do say, oh, my God, it's a police officer.
Good point.
And yes, it is. The police officers do work tough jobs. They have hard hours, and they do tend to have a higher divorce rate than some professions. But, you know, domestic abuse is there for everybody. And unfortunately, when you are in a marriage that's dangerous, the more dangerous thing is leaving it. And this Stacy Peterson apparently told her husband she wanted out, and well, she's out of it, but how, we don't know.
Yeah, there's an email apparently that allegedly said, if I tried to leave him, he said he would kill me. Now, again, I hate to focus on the police officer aspect of that, but that's an important aspect of this and other cases. And how the media has been covering it, Pat, is this degrading law enforcement as a whole? Will this bring or show some other cases brought forward about other law enforcement officers, or is this just, like you say, a high profile case, not a bus driver but a cop?
I don't see that there are overwhelming numbers of police officers, you know, killing off their wives.
Exactly.
I mean, I think it's just unusual when you hear about a police officer who's possibly has killed his wife. You think, oh my God, he's in law enforcement, how could he do something like this, because he's there to protect us. And we have a hard time envisioning him then committing crime. But one of the difficult things when you have people all involved in law enforcement is they have a lot of knowledge.
Right.
And this man had a lot of knowledge. So if he did decide he, you know, wanted to get rid of his wife, he would have some clues of what to do. For example, one thing you might know is that you don't drop the body in the neighborhood.
Right.
You go real far away. And he had probably, if this Stacy went missing about 10 o'clock in the morning, he claims she called at 9, and I'll talk about that in a minute. That's a massive red flag. But he claims she called at 9, but nobody reported her missing till, well, say 18 hours later. That meant he, if he did something, had 18 hours to put her in a vehicle and drive her far, far away, and, you know, to a, 2 hours away into a mountain and drop her down a ravine.
Mm-hmm.
So now while EquiSearch and the police and every neighbor is out there combing the parks nearby, he's just sitting there going, good luck, because she's nowhere around here.
Exactly.
He knows that if you can't find the body, you have a hard case.
Yeah, exactly. And if we could, let's talk about the typical profile of this type of, again, allegedly, of this type of husband, that Scott Peterson comes to mind.
Psychopath.
Psychopath.
I mean, when you get to the point that your way of solving your problems is killing people, you've gone over the psychopathic line. You simply have no respect for other human beings. You don't think they have any rights. You think you should be the only one to come out on top. And you could care less about your children, because obviously if you're killing their mother, you don't care much about them either.
Right.
And so this is the kind of person, a very manipulative, power-hungry person who wants his way all the time.
I'm told that the state police have taken over the investigation, which is a good thing. But how difficult is it for law enforcement to investigate their own?
Well, it's never a pleasant thing. But you know, we don't know what they really think of him personally. They
yeah.
may be going, "Oh God, yeah, Drew. Geez, you know, we probably think he did it too."
Exactly.
But I want to talk about this red flag about the phone call, because I think this is the most interesting part of the case.
Sure.
Now, we have, if Stacey Peterson just decided to go missing, in other words, she just wanted to run away, or maybe she wanted to hide in a motel
mm-hmm.
and just make everybody wonder what happened, to her, like kind of like the runaway bride, get a lot of attention, scare,
right.
maybe even scare her husband into missing her, and then show back up again. That would have maybe, you know, we would have thought, well, maybe she did just run away. But what girl, wife, what woman who's terrified of her husband, wants a divorce, and probably despises him at this point, would call him to say, "I'm gone," but not call any of her relatives or friends to say, "I'm okay."
Right.
He says he called them at 9 o'clock at night, and after that, there are no cell phone calls recorded. Now, what did she do? Call her husband and then throw her phone into a ditch? I mean,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't make a lot of sense, but would he have made that phone call and then thrown the phone into a ditch? You betcha.
When we talk polygraph examination
mm-hmm.
for Drew Peterson, of course, the acceptance in court is one thing, but how important is that for someone in this case to step forward and say, "I'll take it"? Again, I go back to Scott Peterson
right.
on TV, putting up the posters, doing all that routine, playing the role, where this Peterson is basically disappeared.
Right. Well, you know, polygraphs are extremely useful in the sense that what you're saying is, I have nothing to hide. I want the case to be handled properly. I don't want people focusing on me when they should be looking at somebody else. You know, come to my house. There's no evidence there. Check my cars out. There's no evidence there. If I didn't hurt her or do anything, there's simply no evidence. I'll come in for the polygraph. You ask me four simple questions. You know, did you hurt your wife? Did you kill your wife? Did you move her body? Well, what are the answers going to be? No, 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 no. That's not that hard to answer, unless you're lying.
Well, a lie detector and a truth verifier is a polygraph test for sure. Pat Brown's here from the Pat Brown Criminal Profiling Agency, and her webpage is www.patbrownprofiling.com. Where do you see this case going in the next day or so? The Stebbik case, for example, kind of died out in the media. Is still an important case.
Right. My guess is that, I personally think Craig Stebbik is responsible for the missing Lisa. And but they couldn't find evidence. They couldn't find a body. And he refused to let his children be interviewed by the police, which is a big red flag again. And this is the same thing we're probably going to see happening in this particular case, because if your kids didn't see anything wrong, let the police talk to them. But if he committed this crime, Mr. Peterson, what he's depending on is they're not going to ever find enough evidence to prove anything in court. So I'm just going to sit here and let them work at it.
That's that narcissistic personality.
You bet.
Pat Brown from the Pat Brown Criminal Profiling Agency, thank you.
Oh, no problem.
Take care.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be back, and we're going to continue on with this discussion regarding Sergeant Drew Peterson's missing wife, Stacey Peterson, with Dr. Clint Van Zandt. He's a retired FBI agent, a regular guest on my program. And we're going to talk a little bit different. We're going to talk about that email that she left allegedly saying, "If I tried to leave him, he said he'd kill me." And then after that, a expert in domestic violence, Denise Brown. We all know Denise as Nicole Brown, Simpson's sister. And Denise has been a champion for the rights of those that are victims of domestic violence. You are listening to the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
It's the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
right. We are back. Allegedly, the email said if I tried to leave him, he said he'd kill me. We continue on with our discussion on the disappearance of Stacy Peterson, the wife of Sergeant Drew Peterson. And we bring on Clint Van Zandt to talk about this. He has written an interesting article at MSNBC.com and, of course, is following this case closely. Hi, Clint.
Hey, good evening.
Again, here we are, you know, with another law enforcement official's officer's wife disappearing. I know it's high profile. It's a cop. It's not a bus driver. But what's going on here? It's putting a black eye on the badge, or is it?
Well, there's a lot of badges and a very few black eyes. So
right.
I think, you know, there was a... Years ago, back in the 50s, there was the chief of police in Los Angeles who said the only problem with recruiting police officers was that we had to take them from the human race. You and I know that we're all going to bring along baggage and personalities, whether we're a police officer or a senator or a congressman or a president or whatever we are. We are who we are, as Popeye says. And I think that's part of the challenge here. The issue to me in this missing Stacy Peterson case is that, as you know, this is, notwithstanding this is Sergeant Peterson's fourth wife, unfortunately many cops and people in law enforcement experience multiple families. Their job has, sometimes challenges those personal relationships. But in his case, there are documented histories, especially with the current and the former wife, of incidents of abuse, of stalking-like activities, of allegations that he beat his current and his former wife. Many situations, again, with one wife, there were 18 individual documented incidents of police having been sent to the house, nine of which were some type of assault-type complaint. It to me is challenging that the department was able to allow a police officer to continue as a sworn gun-carrying police officer
right. When
there are allegations of domestic abuse, violence, beatings. I mean, you and I know the term rubber gun squad.
Yep.
And that is basically when someone is has committed some type of act or is suspected of it anyway. Many law enforcement agencies, they'll basically take your gun away from you. They'll assign you at least to administrative duties on the inside. They won't put you out as a gun-carrying police officer until allegations like this are resolved. And that's one of my challenges here, that this has been allowed to go on within his community, within his department, within the home for a number of years, and apparently has gone basically unchallenged.
Yeah, and a lot of jurisdictions not only do that, but it's also law in a lot of states. And why this went on is beyond me. I want you to put your profiling hat on for a minute. Here we have a police sergeant, married, we're going to go back a bit, 47 years of age, and he starts up an affair with a 17-year-old. Red flags are jumping out all over the place here. What does this tell you about this individual?
Well, it tells us a lot, I think. In fact, I'm sitting here writing the foreword for a new book. It's called Erased. The basic premise of the book is that there are individuals, there are basically men, who not only make a decision that they are going to get rid of a significant other, that they want to separate, meaning divorce, but sometimes they make a decision, I want to wipe this person out. I want to erase them from my life altogether, as if they didn't exist. And it's an interesting premise in the book that I'm reading right now, and I find this with Sergeant Peterson. This is someone who, you know, again, being a cop, being this, the personality that he has, I think we have a balance here between, you know, somewhat of an individual who's a little bit of a psychopath, maybe a little bit of a sociopath, a very strong narcissistic individual. That's a bad combination in anybody. But if you take that combination and put it into a badge-carrying, gun-carrying police officer who's out making decisions concerning your and my daily civil rights, as well as what goes on his home, that's a bad situation. I mean, I've encountered women who have been spouses of male police officers who have been abused and who have told me in counseling situations that their husband has told them that there's nothing they can do because if they report their husband, the husband could be fired and therefore the family would lose their job and the wife would be responsible for that. I mean, what a terrible trap.
Yep.
That some manipulative individuals, be he a police officer or not, but in the case of somebody like Peterson, could allegedly lead his wife into, where she just felt she had nowhere to run to and nowhere to hide.
Dr. Clint Van Zandt is here, and we're talking about the police sergeant's wife in Illinois, Stacy Peterson, who is missing. You mentioned all the domestic calls to the residents. Obviously, the police service there is going to come under huge scrutiny. I understand the state police have taken over the investigation now, but the blue wall of silence question will come up. And I'm not sure if it is as prevalent as it was 25 years ago or more, because there are, like you say, more responsible police officers than there are irresponsible. But does this still exist? How much was, Drew, you know, smarten up, we're going to leave, no more arguments, that type of call?
Well, you know, we have to realize that probably 2 to 4% of a population group, say in the United States, for example, you know, can be diagnosed sociopathic, psychopathic. So I would say that, you know, even though we try very hard to exclude those people from law enforcement, that they're still able to get in. And that, you know, I've arrested people as an FBI agent, I'm sure you probably have too, who have said, oh, I could have been a police officer, yeah. I could have been an FBI agent. And there's a lot of them feel that there's a very fine line between a crook and a cop, that they could have carried out the responsibilities of a police officer and feel they might have. Now, you know, I may just nod my head and, you know, you go ahead and do what you got to do in an arrest situation anyway. But, I've had to think sometimes, you know, there may be a grain of truth in that you have to be very careful in law enforcement about why people want to be a police officer, a Secret Service agent, FBI agent. Now, I mean, you obviously don't go into it for the money. So if you go into it because you want some type of power and authority over others, if you've had a challenged life, you know, if we just go back a couple of months, here in the United States, we had, you and I talked about this, 20-year-old deputy sheriff.
Yep.
Who had shot and killed six young kids, peers of his, in a situation because they had said a couple of negative things about him, so he runs out to the car and gets his department-issued AR-15 and comes in and blows these kids away. Well, this is someone who had been picked on when he was in high school. He had been bullied. And then he, as far as I'm concerned, purposely went into law enforcement to turn that around, to turn the tables on. And when he saw he wasn't being respected by his peers, that's when he lost it. Well, that young man should have never gone into law enforcement, and there is a very small number of people out there across the board, across the world, who shouldn't be in law enforcement because they came in for the wrong reasons. And the question is, do we have the ability to screen out people who want to come in for the wrong reasons? And I think the answer is no, we don't. There is no one or multiple psychological testing instruments that will allow us to totally screen those people out. And that's why we still find the potential bad eggs. And right now, Sergeant Peterson has not been charged with anything.
No.
His wife is missing.
Yep.
We do know that the medical examiner and the police department and the Illinois State Police, they're revisiting the death of his third wife. As you know, she allegedly drowned in a bathtub after he had been by the house to pick up their two children by that marriage. And when he goes back to the house a day or two later, she's found in the bathtub with contusions to her head, blood in her hair, and she's dead in the bathtub. And the medical examiner ruled that as an accident. Well, come on. I mean, I don't think so. I wouldn't have thought so at the time. And now I think there's even more reason to go back and look at that. But this is something we find in abusers, and this is something we find in you know, some of the Scott Peterson from the West Coast, you know, wife Lacey Peterson, who was killed on Christmas Eve by Scott and then taken out and dropped in San Francisco Bay. There are individuals who make a decision that they don't want to go through divorce proceedings. They don't want to share their salary. They don't want to share their retirement. And the way they're going to resolve that is by a not just a divorce legally, but a wiping out of that person who just becomes kind of a lump in the road that they have to go over. They're just going to move that lump aside. And there are those out there who would kill a spouse, a significant other, just to deny them that ability to continue to affect their life. And the challenge comes, we're talking about right now, is that there's a potential, in this case, that it's also a police officer who may or may not have done something. Now, the challenge is, you know, going back, looking at a 2004 death, can we revisit that former wife of his who died in a bathtub and suggest he had anything to do with that? And fast forward to missing Stacy Peterson right now.
Yep.
We've got a missing person. But I tell you what, if, you know, I hate to say it, but if there was something in me that wanted to get rid of my significant other or wife, you and I would be smart enough that it wouldn't be a bludgeoning in the house. There wouldn't be blood all over the house. There wouldn't be evidence of a fight. She would just disappear,
right?
Because we would have pre-planned how to do it, and we would have pre-planned a body disposal site where she couldn't be done. That doesn't take a whole lot of common sense, and it's something well within the capability of a police officer to pull that off.
You know, you look at the just last couple of minutes that I have you here, Clint Van Zandt is here. We're talking about missing person Stacy Peterson. You look at the Stebbick case and still not being solved. There's the potential of this one, although there's some more direct evidence in this case, somewhat, again, alleged, that this may not be solved either. Why are we seeing more cases of these women that are just vanishing?
Yeah, and I think that's the interesting thing, too. I mean, now, it's no heavy lifting when you say a fight takes place between a husband and wife, boyfriend and girlfriend, whatever it is. There's this tremendous rush of emotions. There's this anger, this rage, this frustration. It's reach out, you hit, you strike, you stab, you bludgeon, you shoot, whatever it is. And then there is massive amounts of evidence of the crime. Many times when something like that happens, an individual will come up with some type of story to suggest it was an unknown offender or something, but that story breaks down, and he breaks down very quickly. But I think we're seeing other people who have learned, who have followed the California Scott Peterson case and many other cases over the years. I mean, the ultimate perfect crime is committing a murder and getting away with it. There is no more perfect crime than that. But that is not the unthinkable, because it can be done. And I think there are people out there who have made a decision that I'm not going to lash out and kill someone out of anger, frustration, and rage. I'm going to do it with a cold, cool, calculating mind. I'm going to think out in advance how I'm going to do it. I'm going to cover my tracks, and I'm going to put this person where nobody's going to find them. And then realize that the only person that could put them in jail is themselves. All they have to do is tell themselves to shut up, and they will not get caught for this. And except for a fluke of nature or some lucky find by police or some search person out there, if they've put that missing person in a deep enough hole or ran them through a chipper or whatever they're going to do, we may not find where that person went. And then who's ever responsible for the demise, all they have to do is keep their mouth shut. They have committed, as far as they're concerned, the perfect crime.
Well, it's a case that we'll all be following. Clint, it's always nice to have you.
Thanks for having me tonight.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. That's retired FBI agent Clint Van Zandt. Speaking of crimes that people get away with, Denise Brown, sister of Nicole Brown Simpson, will join us next here on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, here's your host, Dana Pretzer.
Hi, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. Domestic violence has reared its ugly head again in the media with the Stacy Peterson disappearance. We're going to talk about that a little later on in the program some more. That's the law enforcement officer's wife who has vanished. And sadly, it looks like domestic violence will be a huge part of it. The statistics are staggering. Domestic violence is both a national and worldwide crisis, according to a UNICEF study. And 20 to 50% of the female population of the world will become victims of domestic violence. Denise Brown is here. You know her as a champion for the rights of women who are victims of domestic violence. Of course, her sister, Nicole, was a victim of domestic violence, lost her life in a big part due to domestic violence, and a fellow by the name of Orenthal James Simpson. And it's a pleasure to have Denise Brown with us this evening. Hi, Denise. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thanks, Dana.
You know, I want to talk a little bit about the Stacey Peterson case with you for a minute. I know we hadn't prepped on that, but it's a case that's very prevalent in the media right now. Law enforcement officer, his wife has disappeared. People are coming forward now with emails from her talking about him being controlling, all the classic signs, cycle of violence, all of that. What can you say about it? What do you know?
Right. Well, domestic violence, like I said, like I have said in the past, it happens everywhere. It can happen to anyone. The cycle, you know, there are no socioeconomic boundaries when it comes to domestic violence. It doesn't see if you're rich or poor, black or white, gay or lesbian, Democrat or Republican, or what religion you are. So domestic violence can affect anyone and everyone. I have heard this all too often of police officers, being charged with domestic violence. There was a law passed in the state of California saying that, you know, if there was ever a gun or if there was any conviction of domestic violence for a law enforcement officer, they actually had to get a desk job or something and, relinquish their guns, and then they'd have to go back into court to try and get those back and, have a case for themselves. So if there was ever any domestic violence in their lives, they would have to go and do that. So that's actually a good thing, because domestic violence, like I said, I mean, it can touch anybody, and anybody can be a batterer or can become a victim of domestic violence. There's a woman that I was introduced to. She wrote a book called The Monster Behind the Badge. Mm-hmm. So, and she was also a sheriff. And a law enforcement officer, and her husband was a law enforcement officer, and she ended up writing a book because all the torture and everything that she went through, you know, being a wife. And so it can happen to anybody and everybody.
There's that blue line or blue wall of silence or whatever you want to call it that comes into place here, and the police department in this Peterson case is coming under criticism now because of past reports, and you mentioned it as
they
for
keep things quiet, don't they?
Exactly.
I mean, and see, that's the problem. It's like, you cannot, the law is the law, and if you're not going to do what's right, you shouldn't be a law enforcement officer. You should not be somebody that enforces these laws. For victims of domestic violence, a law enforcement officer is somebody that they want to be able to trust. They want to be able to go to. They don't want to go to somebody that's already treating their wives like this, that somebody is a batterer, because they're just going to get ridiculed and they're going to be thrown, you know, in between the cracks, and they could end up losing their lives as well. A law enforcement officer is there to uphold the law. And the law states that, you know, a torture of a human being is not legal. You cannot do that. And that is what domestic violence is. It's torturing. It's an assault on an individual. And, you know, they have been able to get cases. They haven't been able to get domestic violence convictions, but they've been able to get torture convictions. So if that's the way that people have to start treating this, which is actually what it is torture on another human being, they have to feel safe going to law enforcement, not think that, oh, my God, these good old boys are going to stick up for one another, and I'm going to fall between the cracks, and I'm going to end up losing my life. It's just not right.
And that brings me to my next question, because this is not only a physical problem, and the statistics are very clear for those skeptics that are out there, that those that are victimized by a partner, 85% are women, 15% are men, so it's very clear. But when you have that blue wall of silence, that lack of faith in law enforcement, enforcement. And the statistics that come forward as far as those that don't report domestic violence, what can be done to reassure those that there are good cops out there, that you should report this and people can help you? Plus, there are other ways of reporting domestic violence besides the police.
Well, I think that what people need to do is they need to realize that this dirty little secret, that's what I call it,
right.
And a lot of people call it a dirty little secret. This dirty little secret needs to be talked about. It needs to come out in the open. It needs to stay out in the open. Yes, there is help for you. There are organizations, there are shelters out there that are there to help you. The shelters usually have really great relationships with law enforcement. You will know which ones are the right ones, which ones are the wrong ones to go to. Hopefully you don't get, if you call 911 and you end up getting that bad cop, there's an 800 24-hour domestic violence hotline, which is 1-800-799-SAFE. And they can give you the resources and referrals to the shelters in your community, in your area. So that's another way of doing it if you are too afraid to call law enforcement because you have not gotten the results that you wanted. Call your local shelter, and they're there to help you. So the 24-hour domestic violence hotline is there for just that.
Let's talk about you. Of course, your website, denisebrown.com. The heading is Making a Difference One Day at a Time, and you should be very proud, ma'am, that you have made a difference. You've fought hard, and you've done, I'm sure Nicole is watching everything that you do. You've done a lot of good for a lot of people. I'm not trying to embarrass you here, but this is important. I want you to talk a little bit about some of the work you've been doing.
Well, Dana, thank you. I just truly believe that it takes all of us to make a difference. It takes everybody that works in this field of domestic violence in this area it takes everybody so that we can each save people's lives. I just want people to remember that, you know, that's what it's all about. It's saving people's lives. Domestic violence in our society it does not just affect the possible man, wife, and children that are in that family. If it's a woman and a woman or a man and a man in a relationship, it affects the neighborhood. It affects the people, your friends. It affects your family. It affects more than just those two people or three people possibly. You know, and that's what people need to remember is that that's what we need to do. We need to all work together so that we can make a difference in somebody's life and that we can end up saving people's lives. Yeah, I've done my share. I mean, I just got back from being on the road for 6 weeks.
Wow.
And, I was traveling around the country speaking about domestic violence. I mean, East Coast, West Coast, all the way over to Hawaii. And the problem is everywhere. The problem is prevalent. I do whatever I can to help communities and passing legislation. They're trying to get a 12-hour, in New Mexico right now, they're trying to get a 12-hour hold on batterers when they are arrested. So that, you know, a victim of domestic violence can pursue, you know, a shelter or getting out or getting help or whatever they need to do. There's different things that people can get involved in. And I just always believe that working together, we can make a huge difference. And if we could just all talk instead of reinventing programs, let's utilize existing programs that really work. Because sometimes it takes 6 months to make sure a program works and somebody can save their lives or it's a good program. But yet there's programs out there for children, for women, for teens that already work. So let's implement those. And I truly believe, I just got involved in a global effort. I mean, not just with denisebrown.com because I've got, you know, several things that I'm working on there. One of them, which is animal abuse.
Right.
I mean, a lot of times women don't leave their domestic violence situations, their abusive situations, because they have their four-legged friend is their child. You know, so oftentimes shelters even don't take pets, which is which is very sad. So we're working with the Humane Society and different shelters, animal shelters, that will house their pets so that they can get out of the abusive situations. You know, which is a great thing, and people are starting to do that all over the country. Another great thing is you know, Reshape Society. ReshapeSociety.com is, I just became involved in that, and that's a global effort to make positive change in society. And ReshapeSociety.com is, what I love about it is I love their tagline, bring sanity back to humanity.
Right, yeah.
Really, that's what we have to do.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're just tuning in, Denise Brown is here. You've done some work, like I'm doing right now, as a show host. Tell us about your talk show.
Well, I am going to get that started. I haven't started it yet, but I am working on it. I've got some people that are, you know, putting in like little suggestions of what I should do the talk show on and little topics that I could do. I would love to be able to, you know, do what I do and reach more people because I can travel around the country and I can speak. I can do individual radio shows like this, like yours, Dana, and I can do television shows that are local television. But, you know, there's people out there that you can't reach oftentimes, maybe in rural communities that you want to be able to reach and you want to be able to talk to and you want to be able to let them become aware of the resources and people out there that are willing to help them. And so I just feel like doing that and reaching out to these people in whatever way that I possibly can is what I feel like I need to do.
I think you'll do a great job with that. Let's talk a little bit about the media. And, you know, when you see a high-profile case like the Peterson case that's prevalent on the cable news shows right now, and you see the connection to domestic violence, they're doing a good job connecting the dots. But does the media do a good enough job all the time? Because a big part of this is education. And does it take a high-profile case to bring it forward, or should media outlets be doing more as far as education into domestic violence?
Well, I think that the media, and I get this every time I speak and I do a question and answer, it's funny that you should mention this, every time I always get one of those things, Denise, when are you going to go fight Hollywood? I go, excuse me? And, they, you know, they turn around, when are you going to stop Viacom and Paramount and all these studios from making these horrible, you know, these horrible movies that are teaching our children that violence is okay? And, you know, I mean, that's kind of away from the question that you're asking, but the media can play a huge part in domestic violence, in any kind of form of violence that's out there. I think that when they have a chance and an opportunity, when there's a situation like this, they have an opportunity to go and talk to their local shelters, to talk to maybe a survivor of domestic violence, maybe talk to somebody that it's happening to and do a positive take on it. You know, you can hear about all the horrific things, but victims of domestic violence, they're living that nightmare. They know what it's like to live that nightmare and to be scared to death. And, you know, let's turn it around and make something that's more positive, which is a solution base of what it is you can do, you know, if you find yourself in a situation like that. So I truly believe that the media can do more when it comes to the issue of domestic violence, and not just when these high-profile cases come about. You know, do something every month. Let somebody know that, hey, you know what, we're going to take a stance, be it NBC, ABC, CBS, whatever the network is, take a stance and say, we're going to do every month, we're going to profile something about domestic violence, and we're going to do a positive solution-based type of show. I think that would be absolutely wonderful. People are craving positive solution-based stories for anything, really.
Absolutely. You talked about the term living a nightmare. You did that. You've had firsthand experience, you, your family, and the Goldman family, etc. I would be remiss, but I don't want to talk about him too much if I didn't mention the cockroach of all cockroaches, Orenthal James Simpson. Your thoughts on his current trouble before the law and his narcissistic personality and some of those that put it on a pedestal and say, you know, he's still the juice. It makes me sick every time I see that.
Well, yeah, that's kind of, it makes me sick too. I think that there are maybe, I don't know, maybe what, 5% of people that think that he's still the juice?
Probably.
You know, I don't even know if it's that many, to be honest with you. I think that his day of reckoning hopefully will be here now. I hope that justice will prevail in something. All I can do is say that there's a 50-50 chance. I mean, to be realistic, because you never know. I mean, look, they let him go in the criminal trial.
Yeah.
They convicted him in the civil trial. The judge gave him back his children. So it's like, you know, and all of these people, money speaks. volumes. Even though he claims he doesn't have any, he's got plenty. You know, it's just money talks. And he's got, you know, when I heard about the FBI being involved 3 weeks ago and being contacted doing a TV show or something like that, I sit there and I go, oh, my goodness, he's going to walk again.
Yeah.
You know, I just sit there and I just cringe because I don't really have that much faith in our justice system anymore.
No, understandable.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I know, that is understandable, but, I tell people, you know, you got to have faith because it's the only justice system that we have, and then I sit there and I look at our cases and I think, man, how can I tell people to have faith, really, honestly, and, you know, think that they are going to be making the right decisions, but, you know, I just keep my fingers crossed. I keep doing what I do, which is talk about the issue of domestic violence, which is getting that message out to the forefront. I think that, you know, whatever happens with him, happens to him, it is what it is. I keep my fingers crossed every day that something's going to happen and that, you know, that somebody will finally make the right decision, put him behind bars or get rid of him, you know. And I just, you know, I just cannot live my life thinking like that, though. It took me 13 years to get over the anger and the hate and the bitterness and all of that. And I just need to stay there because I feel like I can make a bigger difference in saving people's lives than worrying about what O.J. Simpson is doing in his life.
Well said. Denise Brown is here. On your webpage, and I've done some stories on this on my program, is the discussion regarding teen relationships and violence. We hear a lot about, young kids, sadly, in schools, the young girl that's seeking her, you know, her first boyfriend attention, and it turns into a violent situation. The kids don't know what to do. Let's talk about that a little bit and what we can do to help some of the young kids out there.
Can I just tell you that that's a huge problem, the dating violence, because teenagers, when they first get into a relationship, especially with a popular guy on campus, maybe a football player or God knows who, he's popular, he's like, oh my God, he's the cat's meow, and all of a sudden he turns into this, you know, it's still a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde behavior. You know, you got one person that's very loving and very sweet, and then you got this other personality that comes out that's just a total nightmare and just a horrible person. But what these young girls and young boys need to know is that jealousy. They think that when your partner, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, sits there and is totally jealous and says, well, you can't be talking to that person because I don't want you talking to them, or I don't want you wearing this, or I don't want you doing this, and then they use jealousy to justify their actions, what people need to understand is those are red flags. And there's a great book by a gentleman by the name of V.J. Sharma, and the book is called Insane Jealousy. And it tells you how jealousy kills, and jealousy can kill. And jealousy is not a healthy, oh my God, he loves me so much. Jealousy is actually, when it comes to teen violence and teen dating, it's actually a red flag saying, look out, watch out, get out of that, because it's not a healthy relationship.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there's other things like that, you know, that a lot of these teens use, or a lot of people use. It's like, oh, I had too much to drink, we partied too much, I'm really sorry for my actions. Well, what people need to understand is that there's a cycle of violence, and it's about power and control. The verbal, emotional, psychological abuse, the put-downs, the chipping away at one's self-esteem. You're stupid, you're ugly, you're worthless, nobody's going to want you, you're fat. You know, that escalates. That chips away somebody's self-esteem, and then that escalates into the physical violence. It may not be today, it may not be tomorrow after you hear those words, but it could be, you know, a couple of weeks or a month or a year down the road. But it always ends up escalating into the physical violence. And that's the hitting, the pushing, the shoving against walls, the breaking things, you know, things like that. And then there's the honeymoon phase. And if the victim's lucky enough to survive the abuse, then there's, oh, baby, I'm so sorry. The gifts, the flowers, the excuses, and, you know, the I'm sorrys. And domestic, and that's that cycle of violence that I actually knew nothing about when Nicole was murdered.
Right.
But that's the cycle of violence we need everybody to know about, and to know that alcohol, drugs, whatever, your behavior, if it's an unhealthy way, is a red flag. And that's what these young girls and young teens need to realize. There's a great program out there, the Katie Brown Educational Program. It's out of Rhode Island, out of Massachusetts, that area. And it's absolutely wonderful. And the Katie Brown Educational Program was started by Dr. Jay Shackney because his best friend's daughter was murdered by her boyfriend. And she was young. And so they started this teen educational program. They have Brown University students that are actually teaching the program for them as well. And it's just a really great program. It starts, I think, in the fifth grade, unless they've gotten it younger, but in the fifth grade, the seventh, the eighth, and then it goes into high school. But it teaches them because, young people are getting into relationships in the fifth grade nowadays. You know, so that's a great program for people to get involved with also and to check into. If they have, and they go around and they travel and they speak to different communities, so it's a great program to implement into your high school curriculum, maybe for a week or something like that, to get them in there to talk to your teens.
Absolutely, and how important is it to get to them early and help them when they're young? Just one question.
We get to them even earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we get to them. There's a program from the Minnesota Coalition for Battered Women called Hands Are Not for Hitting, and they start implementing that in kindergarten.
Right.
Kindergarten
on
through the sixth grade. And that's a fantastic program as well for people to, to encourage people to get involved in and get them in there to educate their the young kids, because they've got like little programs where a child places his or her hand on a piece of paper. They outline, they trace their hand, and then they color it, and they write sayings on them, and then they take this pledge, and their pledge is, hands are not for hitting, words are not for hurting, my hand will not commit violence. And it's absolutely fantastic, because these children, they remember these pledges. I do it with the kids in the shelters. When I travel to different places, I actually do it with the kids in the shelters. And I still get hands to this day from when I started traveling 12 years ago.
Well, that's fantastic.
It's a very, very cool program. So there's a lot of great stuff out there.
That's fantastic. Just before I let you go, Denise, and that time has gone by so fast, we'll have to have you on again. Nicole Brown Foundation, the mission statement is, there is no excuse for abuse. I don't think anyone could say it better than that. Tell us a little bit about the foundation.
Well, the foundation, it was first originally started back in December of 94, and what we were a granting organization to grant out money to educational programs and to shelters. And that kind of changed when I started traveling and saw that there was such a huge need for transitional housing. And so we decided, okay, well, we're going to start talking and try to start implementing transitional housing. So we were telling people the need, because in the emergency shelters, the victims of domestic violence and their children could only stay for 30 to 45 days.
Right.
Maximum. I mean, now they've got the transitional housing, some of them for a year, some of them up to 2 years, which is absolutely wonderful. And it's really a must for victims of domestic violence, so that they can get the job training, the life skills, the parenting skills, all the things that they were told that they could never do, get them trained into that, and get them back into a violent-free environment, which is what we like to talk about and what we like to do. And since last year, what we've done is we started building playgrounds that we're raising money for playgrounds for children across the country in domestic violence shelters. So we've been able to, we've also donated some money to a group called Crime Survivors, which makes backpacks for women and children that law enforcement can give out to the women and children if they're fleeing from a domestic violence situation. So they have backpacks filled with the necessities, for their initial run. And we just gave $10,000 to, that was $10,000 to Crime Survivors. We just gave another $10,000 to Findlay, Ohio, because the shelter there, their whole basement and all their goods and everything was flooded in that flood that they had out there.
Right, yep.
So they lost a lot in their shelter, so we ended up giving them $10,000. And now we're going to be helping build a playground out in Fort Lauderdale, at a shelter out in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Wow.
So we're waiting on a quote for that, and we're going to be building a little playground for the kids that stay at that shelter, which is going to be great.
Well, you guys are doing fantastic work. Denise Brown, the webpage is www.denisebrown.com. Thank you, and let's stay in touch.
Okay, Dana, thank you so much for everything.
That's tonight's show. Of course, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can pick up podcasts of past shows, listen to the show live, check out my daily commentary, and much, much more. Our next live show will be November 12th. And we're going to talk about the 300,000 kids who are abducted by a spouse and are on the run. In particular, a case, Hal Berger from Marina Del Rey. He's a businessman, and he's looking for his 4-year-old son that his wife has abducted. Warrants have been issued. It's a big story, and we're going to be talking about that on the next live show, which will be November 12th. Of course, my daily commentary can be heard every day at scaredmonkeysradio.com, and this show should be available for a replay very soon in about an hour or so. Thank you to all my guests. Make sure and check out the creme de la creme, easy for me to say, of the blogs out there, scaredmonkeys.com. Thank you all. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.